from the era that brought you names like Chamberlain, Russell, and West.
To Chamberlain, he's got it!
Jerry West made it from the other side of the midcourt stripe!
To the glory days of Magic and Kareem.
And Magic Johnson is out there celebrating!
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is on the brink of an NBA all-time record.
From a time where last-second shots were expected.
Here comes Kobe from way outside. Got it!
Gets it to LeBron for three for the win. Yes! LeBron James!
And rings were handed out like candy.
Now one. Here's Jordan. Yes! It is all over. The Chicago Bulls have won.
It's Duncan Dynasty with your host, Garrett Bouguet, and it starts right now.
Welcome to another episode of Duncan Dynasty. I'm your host, Garrett Bouguet, and with me this week, I've got a very special guest. He's a first-time guest on the program. He's a fellow sports business classroom alum, and in fact, he's a two-time SBC alum. He also, you can find him on Twitter at PArsenault, that's A-R-S-E-N-A-U-L-T 19. And he also does a lot of great stuff with contract values, and he has his own little contract value calculator. Patrick Arsenault. Patrick, how you doing?
I'm good, Garrett. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to have you on. It's always fun to get somebody new on here. Of course, we've bonded over the last few summer leagues, and
right.
It's always fun to talk hoops. While that's going on. So yeah, it was only a matter of time before I got you on here, and glad we finally could make it happen. And, you know, for this episode, Patrick suggested that we talk about the Houston Rockets, because that's a team that has surprised a little bit and is definitely
surprised a lot.
Yeah, they've got a lot of new pieces, a new head coach. To just give a little some of the basic stats for the team so far. Houston sitting at 6-4. They are 13th in offense, and this is all according to Cleaning the Glass, 3rd in defense, and 5th in net rating at positive 6.8. They've had a little bit of an easy schedule, though. You know, they had a 7-game homestand in there, and but they've got some nice wins. They have a win against Denver already on their docket. So yeah, Patrick, what are some things that you've noticed about Houston early on that has gotten them off to this decent start?
Well, really, it started in November. They got on a 6-game win streak after basically in October starting out like we expected. They were looking like the Houston Rockets of last year. Nothing really was seeming to change yet. And then all of a sudden on the 6-game win streak, things started to turn around, particularly the last 5 games that really kind of led them to that third rank in defensive rating in the league to this point. One of the things that is kind of interesting about that stretch, though, that maybe we can talk about is, like you said, the opponents have been maybe good teams on paper as you look back in at the end of the season, but we've got the Kings without De'Aaron Fox. We've got the Lakers without Anthony Davis, the Nuggets without Jamal Murray. And so it's starting to kind of bring into question, like, what do those games mean versus, like, is it something that they can sustain going forward? Which I think they have some signs that I believe that they actually can, and it's not just because of who they played, but it's something that we can maybe talk about a little bit too and see what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, let's get into the defense, because yeah, that seems to be largely what's driving the team's success. You know, and they in their last game they lost to the Clippers, but that was a close one that they did pretty well defensively till the very end of that game. They're 4th in defensive effective field goal percentage right now, so they are limiting the efficiency of the opposition. They're also 7th in defensive rebounding rate. You know, Şengün helps with that a decent bit. But here's a stat, though, that maybe would indicate that this is a little bit fluky. The opponents are shooting 32.5% from the three-point line, which yep. Houston ranks number 1 in the NBA right now. And typically, you know, a lot of that, you know, obviously you can do some of that, like contesting well and you know, getting out there and making those shots challenged as opposed to wide open looks. But typically, if you're number one in the NBA in that stat, that's, you know, over a 10-game sample, that's not going to hold moving forward.
Right. And I think, I mean, you mentioned as we were kind of prepping for this, you watched that Denver game. That's one that I took a look at as well. And down the stretch in that game, as it kind of tightened up, I believe Denver at one point was 0 for 7 in the fourth quarter from three. Like you said, that's not something that you can always count on going forward over a larger sample. I do want to give credit to Fred VanVleet in the games that I've seen so far. He's been a pest on ball. You add to that Dylan Brooks on the perimeter. You have the length of Jabari Smith. I think they've got the pieces there to really make this a sustainable defense. And, you know, Ime Udoka coming in there, really, from the front office perspective, signing veterans, Brooks, VanVleet, add to that Jeff Green on the bench. Those are guys that are setting the defensive culture with that talent around them. It's something that I think they can sustain based on that. But like you said, it's hard to say if it's going to be exactly at this level based on some of the shooting luck that has been in their favor by their opponents.
Yeah, and that perimeter defense that you mentioned is the big difference between the roster this year and last year. Of course, you had Smith Jr. and Şengün as your 4 or 5 last season, but you know, you didn't have VanVleet, you didn't have Dylan Brooks. Those guys, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, are pests. They make it really the man they're guarding really uncomfortable. They get up into their jersey. And I think also with Smith Jr., that's been even more so than the offense. I think he's taken a leap this season on the defensive end. You see him, he's not getting a lot of steals and blocks, but just in terms of his activity, you know, swiping at the ball, just making guys feel a little bit more uneasy when he's guarding them, you know, getting his hands up and contesting well. I think he's taken a leap there. So, yeah, like, you don't think of Şengün as this guy that is some great, you know, anchor of a defense, but you know, there are more than one way. There's more than one way to skin a cat, right? So, you know, some teams do it with just that elite rim protection at the basket. Other teams do it by just making it really hard to get penetration, right? And really hard to, you know, get easy looks coming off of screens because, yeah, even though Şengün has largely been in a drop, you see the likes of VanVleet and Brooks and Smith, those guys are able to get over screens and contest from behind.
And that's, I mean, like you said it right there, that's the key to the drop coverage. If you've got your big and drop and you can't get over a screen, imagine you're playing Phoenix from past years, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, those guys, they're killing you in the drop with that in the mid-range there in a playoff series. So having these guys as a foundation to your defense where you know you have a drop big, you know Şengün is your future, you want to build around him, you have to get guys who are these pests that can get up on the as an on-ball defender, get through screens, and really make things difficult at that point of attack so that you can give time for Şengün to set up and be in that drop.
Well, and again, speaking to that Denver game, one of the things that was very noticeable, and it's been a frustration of mine, at least in the regular season with Mike Malone for years, is he plays these like 5-man bench units that have no theory of how to score the basketball.
Yeah.
And especially with Jamal Murray out, he takes Reggie Jackson out early and puts him with the second unit, but he's still technically a bench player, you know? So
right.
I think Jokic came out in the first quarter with maybe like a minute or so to go. The Nuggets were at 30 points. He comes back with like a little less than 9 minutes to go in the second. They're still at 30 points.
Yeah.
But, you know, to give credit to the Rockets there as well, the defense, they've got some defense they're bringing in off the bench as well with the likes of Jay Sean 100%. Tate and Tari Eason, a couple of guys that you know, really are active and strong players. You know, that's another thing is, you know, an underrated element of this team's defense is they've got a lot of strong guys.
Right. Yeah, I think you mentioned it with those two players off the bench, plus Jeff Green playing some of the best defense he's played in a couple of years from the games I've seen.
He's been playing basically backup center. They haven't been playing a traditional center behind Sengun.
Yep. And it makes it extremely switchable with that unit. And you got Jayshon Tate, who you said strong guy, again, can switch all across the floor. Tari Eason is clearing the boards on the second unit. We gave credit to Sengun for that first unit rebound rate. Tari Eason doing a great job with the second unit there. It's a team that, you know, I don't think a lot of people were giving a look towards in the preseason, or, you know, when they were looking at teams that could make a run for this play-in, playoff push. But I mean, they're already showing signs that they can play with playoff teams and have defensive game plans that can take away what teams want to do and make things tough.
Yeah, I think their over-under was set at like 31.5. And if I had to bet now, I would take the over on that.
Yeah.
Another thing that I think, you know, we talked about the three-point shooting maybe not being sustained, the opposition's three-point shooting not being sustainable. But one thing that I think is, and something that you can probably point to Ime Udoka's impact, is that this team's getting back and prioritizing transition defense. Mm. And right now, they are number one in terms of limiting opposition's transition. Opponents are playing 83.6% of their possessions in the half court so far this season. So that's something that I feel like is directly tied to coaching. And Udoka is prioritizing this young team, getting back on defense and making teams play in the half court. And that alone, I think, probably keeps you out of being like a bottom five, bottom 10 defense.
Oh yeah. 100%. I think they control the pace through getting back, and they control it offensively by not playing out of control like maybe they have in the past. Van Vliet running the point for them. They're able to kind of slow things down, get into what they want. They've been very efficient, not turning the ball over, which helps to also limit those transitions. If you only have to get back less than 15 times a game because you're not turning it over, then you've got a better chance at, like you said, keeping teams in the half court. Slow down the game offensively, keep teams in the half court defensively. You're playing these 100-100 games where, again, if they're probably on a 7-game win streak right now, if they don't allow that Harden play at the end, that's basically what all you can ask for.
Yeah. So yeah, let's move to the offense, because you mentioned that they're doing a really good job of taking care of the basketball, and you can credit some of that, to Fred VanVleet, who's handling the ball quite a bit. They're fifth in turnover rate in the NBA, turning it over on just 13.3% of their possessions. But, you know, 13th in offense, kind of right around league average. There was nothing I looked at outside of the turnover rate that, like, jumped off the page as they're doing anything that great. But, yeah, like, if you have a great defense and your offense is league average, that's still a decent formula.
Yep. 100% there. I want to just add to that assist turnover conversation. Van Vliet, 4.76 assist to turnover ratio. It's career high margin there for him.
That's Chris Paul numbers right there.
Right. I mean, he's up there with Chris Paul, Tyrese Halliburton, Mike Conley, some of the best decision makers in the league with the basketball. And you look at their record in games that they have 16 or more turnovers, they're 1-3. Games when they have fewer than 16, 5-1. So it's a direct kind of correlation there when they take care of the basketball. And I think Van Vliet's been a huge part of that, giving them a mature floor reader, ball handler to make those decisions for him. And then ultimately they've given the keys kind of to Sengun to play a little Jokic ball, do some dribble handoffs, short roll passing, kind of run the offense through him. It's a copycat league in some ways. And if you've got a guy like Sengun who can at least do a little bit of what Jokic does to help your offense open up things for Jalen Green, who maybe isn't as effective yet at this point in his career, if you give him the ball all the time and ask him to create everything, give him a handoff and get him downhill going at the rim, much better look for him So I think that Van Vliet impact plus the offense being run through Sengun to open up things for their younger players has really been impactful for them this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll definitely get into Jalen Green, because I think he's maybe the most important player, I think, out of this whole core. Well, and, you know, they've also got Amen Thompson, who really hasn't gotten much of a chance and then got hurt. So we haven't seen much of him. You know, I feel like it's Green and Thompson are the guys that I really feel are the ceiling raisers for this roster. But yeah, Van Vliet is I've always loved his game. And despite the fact that he's never shot that well from the field, you know, he can be a little streaky shooting the basketball as well. And he's never been a very good finisher just because he's, you know, very small and not the greatest of vertical leapers. But he just plays at a really good pace. You know, you already brought up the assist to turnover ratio. He takes care of the basketball. He makes plays. I also think he's one of those guys that a lot of his misses are offensive rebounded by his teammates at a pretty high level. He throws them pretty high up off the glass. So yeah, I've always liked him, and he's just given them that veteran presence that they need. The other thing that's helping the offense be slightly above league average to this point is the play of Dylan Brooks so far. Which is probably the biggest surprise. So, you know, on the season, he's shooting 50% from the three-point line, 16 of 32, you know, and shooting really well from the field. I think he's, you know, cut out some of those, you know, bad mid-range looks that we saw him take in Memphis. He still takes one every now and again. But, he's been every bit worth the contract, at least so far, that he signed, even though, when I was, really critical of the amount of money that he got in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, like you mentioned, it's been efficiency that's really helped him this year. He's not forcing things as much as he was last year in Memphis. I mean, the threes, as far as attempts per game, are down from 6 to 3.2 per game. And that's a big part of why he's able to shoot 50%. He's not forcing as many of those tough looks. But overall, he was a career low 39.6% last year from the field. Now that's up to 53.6%. Usage rate down to career low 16.2%. He's just letting the game come to him. I think he's not feeling as much of that pressure to perform as a guy. He got the contract. The Rockets said, you know what, we know what you can do. We know what you can do defensively. We're not asking you to do a lot. Like, we know you can live up to this contract if you just focus on the defensive end and let the game come to you on offense. And he's proven that so far with how he's played, helping them really raise the ceiling by not taking a bunch of those bad looks.
Yeah, the contract point is really interesting because, you can imagine some guys get paid a lot of money and they think, oh, I've got to show that I can live up to this, right?
Right.
But then for a guy like Brooks, who's a second round pick that didn't get paid a ton on his first contract, right? It's exactly what you're saying, is it's more a relief. And it's like there was a weight on his shoulders that I have to prove that I deserve this contract. And then once I get it, I can kind of relax and just, try to, maybe not do as much. And that seems to be what's happening so far. And you could also maybe credit Udoka for, sending him the right messages that are getting him to, fall in line and be that team player.
I would think that's a huge part of it. And going back to the contracts real quick, I feel like they did a similar thing with Van Vliet. You know, they had the means to give bigger contracts to these players to lure them to this situation in Houston, because they have so many young guys on these rookie contracts, Sengun, Jabari Smith, Jalen Green. They had the flexibility. Now they say, you're here to just be yourself, like, lead these young guys and, just do it efficiently. I think that's the key to it. Like, there's no pressure. Like, even when they signed the contracts, I don't think anyone was like, oh, you know, they're paying all this money to go become an NBA contending team, NBA title contending team. It was, oh, they just needed them to come to Houston. They are just going to get the money, whatever. People kind of thought of it as an afterthought. Now these guys are performing at a level without all this pressure. They're performing at a level that lives up to the contract after all. And I think that's a big piece of it.
Yeah.
It's just empowering them, giving them the confidence.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, you could say the Van Fleet thing was an overplay, but the fact that, you know, it was really only two guaranteed years with a third year, you know, team option. It's, I don't even think it's that bad of a contract, even, you know, prior to the fact that he's shown that he's still got it. Now, of course, guys his size can drop off pretty drastically if they lose a step, but I don't think we've seen that so far.
Yep.
Let's get into Şengün, because you brought it up that they're playing through him, and not only is he operating at the elbows as that handoff guy, you know, like Jokic, if things don't work, if the defense denies the handoffs, the things are breaking down, the shot clock's running down, he can just go into the post and start backing down and make something happen, right? Or he can also face up and hit some jumpers. He's shooting 28 of 51 from short mid-range, which is 55%. He's also at 73% at the rim. So he's been very efficient from that to, you know, anywhere from right at the basket out to 10 to 12 feet. And he's also, I think, one of the best screeners in the NBA. That's something that I think it's immediately noticeable when you're watching a Rockets game, is that this guy is making really good contact and getting the guards like Van Fleet downhill with some separation.
Yep. 100% agree on that. I was actually, in preparing for this, looking back at when I was scouting Şengün heading into the draft, and that was one of the things that stood out was he's a great screener, wide base, gets set up into this pick and roll easily and has that short roll ability. So you could already see like what he could become as a pick and roll option and making plays out of those. And I think the Rockets were, you know, have decided that that's something that they can build around, and hopefully they continue to do so with kind of their ancillary players that they pick up throughout the next couple of years. And you could see it become a case where they build a team kind of like Denver did that just fits around a big man again that can make plays running that offense through there.
What are your thoughts on one thing I've also noticed about him that's made me chuckle just a few times every game is when he's facing up and, you know, the opposition is dropping back off of him and he goes to shoot it, he's typically like, it's not really a Dirk one-legged fadeaway. Not actually accomplishing anything. It seems like he actually prefers to shoot a standstill jumper off of one leg.
I mean, there's not any science to it, I don't think. I think, like you said, it's something that he just maybe developed, even just trying to copycat Dirk, something like that. And somehow he became more comfortable with that, like you said, than with anything else. And sometimes weird things like that, even if they don't seem like they're accomplishing something, just the weirdness of it can throw the defense off a little bit as well. I think, why are they doing this? Like,
yeah,
I think it's a fun thing for sure, like you said.
But yeah, he's definitely been a big part of why the offense has, you know, again, yeah, been slightly above average. I'm curious your thoughts on Jalen Green, because, you know, he's now in his third year. So you'd like to see a little bit more of that offensive consistency from him in this season. And right now he's 56% at the rim. He's shooting 27% from mid-range, 13 of 48 on the season. And it still feels like for a guy of his, with his level of athleticism and burst, there's too many times where he doesn't really seem to fully understand how to change gears yet. It's still like he's trying to figure out the subtle manipulation of defenders to actually utilize that athleticism, that God-given ability that he has.
Right. And I think it could, I don't know, it's something that it could develop over the next couple of years, but you said it, like you said, it's already his third season. I think it's going to be maybe a shift in kind of his mindset to like becoming the player that fits the best with this team going forward, like improving his spot up shooting, improving his cutting, improving coming off these handoffs, just really fitting into more of a role than maybe the superstar role that maybe it was expected he could slide into with his burst, like you said, and being an isolation player, getting downhill, using some of those athletic tools. And I think it might just be more using those tools as an off-ball player to fit in with Şengün being the superstar of the team. I think it just might be a mindset shift that will really kind of unlock his defined role going forward in the league. And it's kind of interesting that that's what it might become, given the draft capital put into him as high as he was selected. But, you know, sometimes that's just how it works for players, especially athletic players like that. Sometimes it doesn't always translate. You have to find different ways to use that athleticism. I think Aaron Gordon is probably a good example of high draft capital guy in Orlando. Tried to be a guy there, a superstar who could, you know, work with the ball in his hands. Never really worked out. You get him more in a defensive role, cutter, lob threat. Doesn't really have to handle much of the scoring offensively. Now, I'm not saying Jalen Green shouldn't handle some scoring offensively. Not comparing him and Aaron Gordon in any way. But as a high draft capital guy, athleticism, you just have to change your mindset sometimes, I think, to really fit in and find where you're going in the league.
Absolutely. And yeah, the, you know, for a guy, he's shooting 38% from three. He's got, you know, the, again, that elite burst. So you'd think, yeah, that's the perfect type of guy to pair with a dribble handoff center, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, I think another issue in where like, so he's surprisingly getting cut off by defenders on drives quite frequently, I think might just be the handle as well, where it's not necessarily that it's super loose. It's more to me that he's not fooling people with his in and outs or his crossovers as much as you would hope. And so the defender really isn't fooled and is able to just, you know, not get off a bat off balance. Whereas, yeah, if you're able to make a really convincing in and out that I'm going to cross over, the defender takes a half step. That's all he needs, but it's just not happening frequently.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having that athleticism for as long as he's had it in his life, you know, you don't always have to make convincing moves when you have that ability. So, You suddenly get to the NBA, and he did have time in Ignite to go against high caliber guys like that. But, you know, you don't always have to develop that if you're not having to make guys miss as much as you can just blow by. Like, he's had that athletic ability his whole career. So it'll be interesting to see if he can maybe, you know, we see some off-season videos going forward of him working on his handle and making more convincing moves like that. But I don't know if that'll ever necessarily be a part of his game. I think it might just be improving on the things that he has shown that he can do right now. You know, a 3-point shot, big step forward this year, percentage wise. Just figure out ways to be a 1-2 punch with Şengün. Figure out, okay, if I can't, you know, make a move off of this, if I can't make someone miss, how can I maybe, you know, pass back, reset, get set for a shot instead? Figure out different ways that they can create a two-man game between them, I think, will be the key going forward.
Speaking of high draft picks, let's get into a little bit of the last couple high picks, top five picks that they've had the last 2 years. I don't know how much of Amen Thompson you got to see kind of at the early stage, the ugly portion of the Rockets season, but it did not go well. I think his plus minus is like minus 1,000 through a few games. it was not pretty, but yeah, like what did you see out of Amen early on? And I guess I should also ask, like, were you high on Amen coming in to his rookie year?
I think, you know, maybe it was even you and I were watching some of the summer league games this past summer, and I think the feeling was pretty good before, you know, ultimately, like all the guys do, getting shut down, injury, whatever it may be with those guys at summer league. But it's something, I love big guards like this that can really defend at a high level, make plays. Use their athleticism to, you know, ignite the break. But it's, I think Amen Thompson in particular is going to have kind of a learning curve, because he's going to be doing a lot with the second unit. And now this is a team that has expectations that it didn't otherwise have. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of Van Vliet and Jalen Green, even Aaron Holiday. Getting some play now as a guard there, and a veteran in the league now as a backup guard. He's not going to have a leash to kind of have these runs where he's part of a lineup that's giving up 10 point leads, whatever it may be, to contribute to that plus minus. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see his development now that the Rockets are what they are. I think if you looked at it before the season, you could say, let's give him the leash, see what happens. We'll live with the results and let him develop that way. Now, I don't know if that's something that they'll be as inclined to let happen. So it'll be interesting to see once he comes back.
Yeah, you know, Aaron Holiday is not, you know, going to wow you as a backup guard, but he's also not going to be a huge detriment to your team, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's where, you know, Ime Udoka and how much he's going to emphasize getting as many wins as possible this year, it's going to be fascinating to watch because, you know, if you're talking about the first 40 games of Amen Thompson's career versus playing that versus Aaron Holiday, you're probably going to win a couple more games. You're probably going to be better with Aaron Holiday, but looking long term, I think it would be wise to give Amen Thompson that rope and that leash and let him grow and learn. But yeah, you know, that is where it gets complicated when you're trying to compete, and that's seemingly where the Rockets are at now, is they're trying to be at least a more competitive team than they've been the last 3 or 4 years, when it's been a bit of a shit show.
for sure. I think maybe taking this time away could help. You're seeing the game from a different lens. You know, that first game of the season against Orlando, I'm just looking at here, minus 34. That's really the key that really hurt him early on. Took 7 threes.
Is tough to do. Minus 34. Yeah. That is, I mean, you almost have
in 21 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. But I think just taking the time away, seeing how a guy like Van Vliet and a guy like Holiday, seeing how they're kind of running it, you can come back with a different lens and slow your game down a little bit. I think we could see him play much better once he comes back. And only time will tell with that, really. But it's going to be interesting to see if he's given that opportunity and if this time away really did help him, or if he comes back and starts chucking up a bunch of shots again, not helping the offense get into what they need to.
When we've seen Assor with Detroit, like, he has shown, you know, some great defensive instincts, some great defensive ability. You know, the passing is there. Obviously, the scoring has been a challenge for Assor, which I kind of expected. I feel like I expect some of those same struggles with Amen as well. The talent is obviously there, and I'm fascinated to watch the Rockets moving forward, and excited when he'll get back out there. Another top five pick in his second year now, and another guy that we got to see in summer league, and he looked really good. Looked like
one of the really
too good for summer league guys, the Jabari Smith Jr.
Yep.
He did a lot of work in summer league, though, you know, hitting tough mid-range jumpers and hitting a lot of tough long twos. And so far, that has not translated to the big club. I brought up earlier, I think he has shown a lot of good signs defensively and growth there. And yep. I think that was one of the things coming out of college that, you know, a 6'10 guy with his length and his mobility could be scary on that end of the floor. But the offensive side of the floor, still a work in progress. He is shooting 36% from three, 17 of 47, but just 1 of 8 from long mid-range. And the shot still, to me, is a little bit too much of a line drive, you know, to really feel comfortable thinking that, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be a 40% three-point shooter.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I'm not sure exactly that he'll be anything more than a solid corner three-point shooting threat. You know, if you're running a two-man game, hit him on the weak side there. But what I have been impressed with, at least with a few of the games I was able to catch pieces of from this win streak, he's scoring on the inside pretty well. It may not be, you know, that jump shot that's helping him, but inside he's been able to finish well, use that size. I think that's a good piece to have when you have a guy like Şengün who may be operating on the perimeter at times. Get Jabari in there as a cutter. He can take advantage of that 6'10 size, the length, and see if he can be an effective inside finisher if the shot's not falling.
Yeah, I think like the stats don't reflect it, but they do have a lot of guys on this team that I think could develop into pretty decent offensive rebounders. And, you know, Jay Sean Tate is a really good hustle guy. You know, you've got the likes of Eason and Smith who are just long and decently athletic. And, you know, Şengün is just a really strong physical player. So you would like to think, too, that, you know, that's something that maybe along with the solid turnover rate that they could maybe start crashing the glass a little bit more. You know, I feel like we talked about the fact that they're getting back in transition and they've prioritized that. It may be to the detriment of the offensive glass. But like once you establish that, okay, we've got a good transition defense, maybe you can start to, as the season goes along, say, okay, we feel pretty good about our transition D. Maybe one extra guy can go crash the offensive boards, right? And we can still maintain that solid transition defense. It's kind of like you want to, I think there's a lot of coaches that believe in the idea of, when it comes to like help defense, you want to teach young players to overhelp initially, and then you pull them back as opposed to, you know, starting out where they're too passive and then try to make them more aggressive over time. I think that's something similar here where you can say our focus is transition defense, but over time we can maybe slightly pull back a little bit to get a few more second chance points.
Right. And I think Şengün can be that guy who can really step into that role as a more dominant offensive rebounder right away. I mean, he's not ultimately the one giving you much in transition defense anyway. So it's going to be those other guys getting back for the most part. So I would like to see Şengün kind of up that offensive rebounding a little bit more than he has this season. And I think that would be kind of the first step towards what you're kind of describing here.
So yeah, I won't put you completely on the spot and say like, you know, is this team a playoff team or whatever, but I guess I am curious, based on what you've seen, what you're seeing, you know, statistically, what are your thoughts? Does this team feel like a team that's going to be right there in that play-in contention, or do you think this is, you know, with some of those maybe fluky shooting numbers, with the fact that, you know, a lot of their schedule has been at home and they've played some teams with some injured stars, are they maybe more in the, you know, late end of the lottery sort of area? Or, yeah, do you think this is actually a legit, you know, playoff contender?
You know, it kind of feels a little bit like Utah last year, that kind of surprised early on, had some free agent signings that made an impact with how they played. And that, you know, that's a team that's right there in the play-in at the end of the season, depending on which direction they kind of want to go.
Yeah.
For the draft or for the play-in. I could see them the way that they're coached and with the impact being mainly defensively so far, as opposed to offensively. I could see them being a team that leans closer towards the play-in. And then when you get there, though, being such a young team, I mean, you've got Van Vliet with the experience, Brooks with some playoff experience, Jeff Green, obviously champion last year, but it still is such a young team at its core that I couldn't necessarily see them getting in as a final playoff team. They're probably on that fringe of the play-in, should be a play-in team based on how they played so far. But I don't think it's going to be this year for them necessarily.
Yeah, I think the Utah comparison is a good one. And like I said, I think they'll probably hit the over on that 31.5. Yeah. But I'd probably put them anywhere from, you know, 34, 35 on the low end. And you know, if things go really well, if Amen Thompson comes back and looks like, a first team all rookie type of guy, you know, the depth of this team, I do think is a strength. So I could see them, you know, approaching 500 if things go really well. But yeah, it does feel like they are still at least a year away from truly being somebody that you should be worried about you're in the Western Conference.
Yeah. Real quick too, speaking of kind of play-in playoffs, how about your thoughts on the in-season tournament? What have you thought of that so far?
I'm a big fan of it. You know, I know some of the, some people have been complaining about the court designs, and certainly there are some hideous ones out there, but I've actually, you know, I feel like, you know, 10 to 15 of them are pretty fun designs.
Yeah.
It's more the ones where, you know, these in-season tournament courts have the color on the, you know, kind of the outer two thirds of the court. And then you've got a different color in the middle third. And it's the courts where the outer thirds are a darker color that I think are the ones that are worse.
Okay.
I like Portland's court. I'm a fan of Boston's court. I even thought the Lakers court looks pretty nice with the yellow on the outer third. I also think just in terms of, I think we've seen players compete a little bit harder in these games seemingly than you would normally expect out of a November regular season game.
And for
the people that are complaining about it, like, you know, just treat them like regular season games then. Or if you weren't going to watch the regular season anyway, then there's no difference.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the league has really tried to push it. You know, they're giving out t-shirts at these games. They're doing the courts. Yeah, they're doing the city edition jerseys. It feels like something, at least. And, you know, all right, it's Tuesday, it's Friday. Here we go. And you have players like LeBron James talking about how much it means, supposedly. And, you know, he's really going for that 500K, all of that. And that's great. I think if the players are saying how much they are putting into these games, it can't possibly hurt, you know. And like you said, if you're really that turned off by it being a regular season game in November, and just think of it like that anyway. But I think it's going to be interesting once we get to these last couple weeks here. Some of these groups a little close, a lot of one loss teams in here. A lot can be decided over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and they even did that. It was like an Ocean's 11 style advertisement for it. I think marketing has been pretty good. And as you said, they've made it not only with the court designs and the jerseys, but with the fact that, it's Tuesdays and Fridays this whole month. They've made it about as easy to follow as you could get. The only confusing part, and Zach Lowe mentioned this on a recent pod, is that like the groups, it should probably just be based on divisions.
Right.
because without that, it's kind of hard to figure out, okay, who's in which group? That to me has been the one element that's a little confusing and not easy to follow, whereas everything else, I think, has been executed pretty flawlessly.
Yeah, I would agree.
Anything else about Houston before we I know there's also a couple of individual players that we haven't teased yet to those listening that we were going to discuss. But yeah, anything else about the Rockets before we go to that?
Just one fun stat I found. They've got two guys above 30% assist percentage right now, Şengün VanVleet. They're one of five teams in the league to have two players with that. Any guesses on other teams?
Ooh, okay. Let's see. Dallas?
Dallas is close. Kyrie's at 29.1%.
Though. Okay. Yeah, I figured Kyrie would be close, but let's see if I got any other guesses here.
They're all Western Conference teams.
All West?
Yeah.
I'm going to say the I don't feel like Denver, because who would be the second guy on Denver?
Denver is one with Murray at 32. Murray has half.
Okay. Let's hear the rest of them.
So the rest, we've got the Warriors, Chris Paul and Draymond Green. The Kings, Sabonis and Malik Monk.
Oh, wow.
And then the last one was really an interesting one to me when I came across it. The Trailblazers, Malcolm Brogdon and Skylar Mays.
Okay, wow. Yeah. Malcolm Brogdon, he's an interesting player because, you know, I do think he's a decent passer, but he is such a like score first player that his first thought is to score. His second thought is to score. And then like, if he has to, he passes, but he still draws enough attention and has enough skill as a passer that he can, get that percentage up, even if he doesn't really want to pass.
Right. Yeah. All right. So,
speaking of good passers, the couple of players that you brought up ahead of time that you maybe had some interesting statistics on, a couple Tyrese's. We've got Tyrese Halliburton of the Indiana Pacers and Tyrese Maxey of the Philadelphia 76ers. I'll throw it over to you. Which one of these guys do you want to discuss first?
Oh, that's a tough one for me. I guess I'll go with Maxey.
Okay.
First on this. I'll use this kind of to plug kind of one of the projects that I have that you can check out on my Twitter, the contract value calculator. Tyrese Maxey is right up there. At the week three update of this through 3 weeks of the season, he was right there with Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic at the top of the league, around $50 million of contract value coming through there. He's doing it with his scoring, he's doing it with his passing and taking a leap. His shooting has been good this year. It's been really interesting to see that, okay, this is what's been hiding behind James Harden the last couple of years in Philadelphia. Like, this is a superstar player. And I give him credit for betting on himself and, you know, maybe Philadelphia not wanting to get into that negotiation either. But he's going to be getting his contract at the end of this summer. It's probably going to be a max, super max language, whatever it ends up being. And I mean, he's right up there with Embiid in terms of importance for this team, but got off to one of their best starts ever. So what are your thoughts on Maxey so far?
Yeah, so I did a podcast with Scott Levine in the a few weeks before the start of the regular season, and we talked about six young players that we were excited to see their development. And Tyrese Maxey was one of my picks. And the couple of things that I wanted to see out of him was we knew he could score, right? We knew he had that great speed. Yeah. We knew he could shoot the three. He's been a pretty consistent over 40% three-point shooter. But could he play make, right? Mm-hmm. And also, could he step up and do a little bit more? He didn't have to be a stopper. He didn't have to be like even a good defensive player. But could he just not be awful?
Which is what he was.
Yeah. And I feel like he's succeeded on both of those fronts to start this season. His assist rate has gone from 16.6% up to 25.9% this year. Mm-hmm. And his turnover rate is at 6.2%, which is one of the lowest I think I've ever seen. So he's taking great care of the basketball. He's scoring at all three levels. He's at 43.8% from downtown, 95.1% from the free throw line. So uber efficient. And then also defensively, we've seen his block percentage has gone from 0.2% to 1.1%, which takes him from the 7th percentile for his position up to the 83rd percentile. Also, defensive rebound percentage, he's gone from 8.4% last year up to 11.3% this year. So he's just been a little bit more active on that end of the floor as well. And as you rightfully stated, he's become a superstar level player if he can keep this up, and he's become, you know, a true 1-2 punch with Embiid.
Yeah. And one of the stats that I was looking at, I think a couple weeks ago, was, you know, players to average 20 points a game, 7 assists, 40% from 3, 90% from the free throw line. It's Stephen Curry. That's it. That's the guy. And, I mean, Maxey has since dropped just below 7 assists, but everything else is holding right there, above 40% from 3. Above 90%, I mean 95% from the free throw line. Are you kidding me? Like he was in the 80s his whole career. He took a huge leap there, and the scoring is up. Like you said, I mean, this would be a Stephen Curry type season statistically if he's able to keep it up. And I mean, I think that, you know, for as much love as he is getting, maybe he's not even getting enough for like being that guy, being a superstar in the making right before our eyes here.
Yeah. And I watched a decent chunk of the, and this also relates to the other guy we're going to talk about, the other Tyrese. But I watched the set that the Sixers and Pacers had. They played back-to-back games against each other. And in the first game, Tyrese Maxey put up 50, and to start that game, it was just Maxey, Embiid, pick and roll, left side of the floor, empty side pick and roll. And the Pacers just had no answers for it. It was just either Maxey getting all the way to the rim, Maxey hitting threes, Maxey getting that floater, or, you know, Maxey hitting Embiid with that pocket pass that, you know, James Harden was so good at last year. But that was another key part of his playmaking that I was curious about, is like how well can Maxey get Embiid the basketball in his sweet spots? And I think he's done a really good job there.
100%. I mean, we talked about two-man games earlier. That's the two-man game that you have to build around. And it's been even better than it was with James and Embiid last year. So it's something that, you know, almost addition by subtraction. You're allowing Maxey to be the full playmaker that he can become now that he's that lead guy with the ball, lead guy playing alongside Embiid. We'll see how far this could take him. I mean, Embiid is still playing at an MVP level. Maxey's right up there at an MVP level so far. You've got the additional depth pieces from the Harden trade. We'll see if this is a team that can, you know, take this momentum, push them past the second round maybe this year.
Yeah. And we should clarify that when you say MVP level, for I would say when there are normal seasons and not when Nikola Jokic exists.
Of course, I mean Nikola Jokic is the MVP so far this season. Let's not get it lost in the translation there. I mean, what was his stats in the loss against the Pelicans? What did he have? 28, 18, and 16. Like. willing this Denver team, even without Jamal Murray for a couple of games, willing them to be just as dominant as they've ever been. I mean, if they end up the one seed and he keeps up the stat line, I mean, it's not going to be a conversation, really.
Yeah. So the other Tyrese, Halliburton, again, speaking of that that set that the Pacers and Sixers played against each other, Halliburton in those two games, Patrick, speaking of good assist to turnover ratios, had 32 assists and zero turnovers in the two games. He just across the board is putting up unbelievable numbers: 49.4% assist rate, 66% at the rim, 61% from the short mid range, 57% long mid range, 44% from three. I believe he's as far as I know, he's leading the league in assists right now.
Yep.
He's just immediately been able to, the likes of Obi Toppin, there's been no issues with the chemistry there. He's finding him for lobs going across the baseline or hit ahead passes. The guy is very quickly becoming one of the best offensive players in the entire league.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we talked about Jokic as an MVP candidate. Şengün being, you know, a baby Jokic, ignoring positions, ignoring everything else, just looking at how they make the game around them, how they influence the court. Tyrese Halliburton is as close of a Jokic comparison as I have in terms of like influencing the court with his passing. I mean, it's from the more traditional point guard position, but he has been, like I said, 32 assists, no turnovers. The decision-making is off the charts. The manipulation, he gets out in transition. And oh, by the way, he can shoot from 30 feet and hit 40% of those threes. Like, it's not something that I think a lot of people expected, or maybe, you know, Phoenix would have taken him in the draft or anyone higher than where he went. And, you know, I think some people had him above where he went for sure, but it's not something clearly that the league thought he could become. I think maybe not even Sacramento, who traded him away, thought he could become. So it's been amazing seeing him play as well as he has in Indiana, being given the opportunity to do so. And I mean, really, the sky's the limit for what he can do with this combination of passing and scoring alongside.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because coming out of the draft, I don't know how you felt about this, but, you know, I think there was some pretty positive indicators of him as a defender. You know, he's not he obviously was going to have some issues dealing with, like, strength and whatnot, but with his length, he did you know, I'm not looking at the college stats right now, but like, I'm pretty sure he was a decent steals guy and playmaker on the defensive end.
Yeah. 99th. I've got it pulled up, the scouting report here from 2020 on him, 99th percentile in the draft class for steal percentage, 3.8%.
Yeah. So he was definitely like a defensive playmaker, and that really hasn't translated. His defense has been the one part of his game where you're like, okay, this needs to get better, especially if this team wants to compete at the highest of levels. But I think one of the things a lot of people might have been worried about was like, okay, it's a little bit of a funky shot release, even though he makes a lot of them. And then also, like, can he just beat guys in isolation, you know, if teams are switching pick and rolls and whatnot. And I think, like, even this year, I feel like he's shown a little bit more burst than I've seen in previous seasons, just getting that step on guys in the half court and opening up passing angles. But the shot, I think, definitely translates. It is funky looking, but it's quick, and he can also hit it stepping back in either direction.
Right, right. And I think that's the key is, like, okay, he could be a solid spot-up guy, is maybe what people thought. If he's open, he can knock it down. But there's no way he can be a lead guard and be able to create his own shot. It's going to take too much time. It's going to... he's not going to be able to get into it off cleanly. Not the case. I mean, he's completely dominating with the shot, off the dribble, spotting up, whatever it may be, stepping back. I mean, it hasn't been a problem at all, and he's improved pretty much every season on that, whether it be in volume or percentage or both.
And yeah, the Pacers offense has just been unstoppable. And
yeah,
I was listening to a Dunked On pod recently, and they made a good point. That's like, this team's number one in the NBA in offense. Who's the second best offensive player on this team? Like, there's not anyone else that, like, you know, Buddy Hield is a decent offensive player, right? But like,
yeah, right.
Your second best offensive player and your number one in the league, your number one guy is doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. Well, yeah. Anything else about those two guys you had before we wrap up here?
No, just looking forward to seeing them throughout the year. Maybe I'll try and catch Halliburton game when he comes to town. Try and get to see him live. That'd be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think both of those, the Tyreses would be fun to watch.
Yeah.
And especially in transition, I think that's another thing that the two of them have in common. And mm-hmm. they do it in different ways. I think Halliburton with his passing in transition, and Maxey just with his speed in transition situations.
Yeah.
Again, you can follow Patrick on Twitter at PArsenault. That's ArsenAult 19. And yeah, definitely check out his contract value calculator. It's really, really good stuff. He knows his ball, and we work together at Sports Info Solutions. I really enjoyed being co-workers with this man, a wonderful person and basketball evaluator. So, Patrick, thanks so much for coming on and taking the time, and hope to have you on in the future.
Yeah, really appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Duncan Dynasty. Corbin Ford and Gary Bouguet here with you, and just wanted to quickly say before we wrap up, please subscribe, rate, and review Duncan Dynasty. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. That is much appreciated. You can find me on Twitter at Garrett Bouguet. Corbin, why don't you tell the people what you got going on?
Oh, man, you can find me on Twitter at CorbinNBA. Definitely make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. I mean, following me is just an afterthought here. But if you want some more NBA content from yours truly, check out Roundball Ramble. It is my podcast. You can also find the description on my Twitter handle, once you click on my Twitter handle. Definitely check that out. And yeah, a bunch of other assorted pods. I love talking hoops just like my friend Garrett does. So you know where to find me there. That's the main part to catch my work.
Yeah, can't recommend Roundball Ramble enough. Corbin does great stuff there, and I've appeared on it numerous times, and hopefully we'll be continuing to appear on it in the future. Again, we appreciate you all for listening, and of course, enjoy the next week in the NBA calendar.